So I thought tonight, rather than speaking about a specific halachic topic that's relevant for Shavuos, I thought we'd speak about something a little bit more global, a little bit more general, which really touches upon halacha in general, and that's something related to Torah Shabbat Peh. So of course we know that we celebrate the other Shavuos, the giving of the Torah Shabbat Ksav and the receiving of the Torah Shabbat Peh. But sometimes when we speak about the Torah Shabbat Peh being received from Sinai, there's a little bit of a confusion what exactly that means. We know, of course, the Mishnah opens up the Perkei Avos, Moshe Kibbutz Torah Sinai. The Rambam tells us that one of the Yidim Ikari Amunah is the fact that we believe that those Torahs were given to us by the Ribbono Shel Olam. The Torah we practice today is the same Torah that was given to Moshe Rabbeinu. And, of course, ultimately that is really the line of demarcation between authentic Torah Judaism and any other version. Is ultimately, it all boils down to this understanding of Torah Min HaShemayim. So the question really becomes, what exactly does that phrase mean, Torah Min HaShemayim, both in a halachic sense, machshava sense, what exactly is that all about? So we spend a little bit of time talking about that tonight. So the Rambam, as I've done with the Perush Mishnayos, tells us that the term Torah Shabbat Peh we use as kind of a conglomerate to describe a lot of different things. Anything that's basically not a Torah Shabbat Ksav, so we lump together to be called Torah Shabbat Peh. But it's not really all the same. There are very specific halachic categories within Torah Shabbat Peh. So the Rambam breaks down Torah Shabbat Peh into a series of different categories. The first category that the Rambam describes is the term that the Gemara uses, Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai. So that term, Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai, we find in the Gemara in several places. And, you know, when a person learns a little bit, they would come to the immediate realization that Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai doesn't appear as many times as we would have thought. I mean, if you would have asked somebody who never opened the Gemara, so what's Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai? Give me an example of Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai. They would have given you hundreds and hundreds and thousands of halachas. Must be Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai. So the Rambam says, you do the math and you count up all the cases in Shas where that specific halachic term, Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai, comes up. It's maybe less than 25 cases. So the Rambam says, what does that term Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai mean? So it means a very specific category in halacha. What it basically means is as follows, says the Rambam, that sometimes we have halachas that have absolutely no shaykhs to Torah Shabbat Ksav. It means there is no remez, there's no hint, there's no drasha, there's no allusion, nothing in Torah Shabbat Ksav which has any indication that the following halacha is true. There's only one way and one way alone that a person can know the source of this halacha, is that his Rebbe told him and his Rebbe told him and his Rebbe told him, going back to Moshe Rabbeinu. It's those types of halachas that the Gemara uses the term Halacha Moshe M'Sinai. Don't even waste your time to try to find the makor in the Chumash, but there is no such makor in the Chumash. This is the Rambam's understanding of the very specific, precise term Halacha Moshe M'Sinai. And the Rambam just gives you a few examples of where do we find, what are some practical examples of Halacha Moshe M'Sinai. So the Rambam tells you a few that happens to appear in Maseches Menachos. The Gemara has a whole series of halachas of tefillin, which are halacha moshe m'sinai. How do you know that tefillin has to be square? So the Gemara never says, benani mil, that tefillin has to be square. And the Gemara doesn't quote a pasuk, es min, v'kshatam, la'o, slamin means it has to be square. So there's no such Gemara, there's no such drasha. The Gemara has three words. How do you know tefillin has to be square? Halacha moshe m'sinai. How do you know tefillin has to be black? Halacha moshe m'sinai. How do you know tefillin has to be sewn with gidin? Halacha moshe m'sinai. Eight different halachas of hilchos tefillin are halacha moshe m'sinai. Then you have other areas. It's not just hilchos tefillin. You have other areas of halacha. But the Gemara also uses the term halacha moshe m'sinai. So the Rambam says that is the first category of Torah Shabbat Peh, pure halacha moshe m'sinai. There is a phrase that appears in the Gemara in several places, which some Rishonim at least assumed was similar, was perhaps even identical to Halacha Moshe M'Sinai, and that's the term Hilchos HaGemirah. So that already we find in other Gemaras, but the Gemara speech uses the phrase Hilchos HaGemirah. So whenever the Gemara says Hilchos HaGemirah, so on the spot Rashi says Halacha Moshe M'Sinai. But the Rambam doesn't say that. The fact that the Rambam lists you off the 25 cases of Halacha Moshe M'Sinai and didn't list any of the examples that the Gemara calls Hilchos HaGemirah So then the Tziv points out that it's quite clear that the Rambam understood that that term Hukhsa Gemirula and Halacha Mashina are not the same. What does Hukhsa Gemirula mean? So the Rambam translated Hukhsa Gemirula Kipshuto. Gemirula means we have a tradition, means we learn Gemara, the lotion of learning. So the Rambam seems to understand that there were certain halachas that Chazal knew to be true, and they knew that were Makoros and Tarshim Bechsav to attesting to the validity of this particular halacha, and they forgot what the pasuk was. They could not remember what the makor for the halacha was. So they knew the halacha was true, but they couldn't remember how it was derived. So that's what the Rambam used the phrase, that's what the Gemara used the phrase, Hukhus and Gemirula. The Gemara in the beginning of the second paragraph of the Kava tells us that there's a special halacha Hukhus Mezikin. You know, normally when an animal damages, if it damages in a normal way of walking, so the owner has to pay full damages. So the Gemara says, what would the halacha be if an animal walks on a stone and the stone goes out and kicks up and breaks somebody's pottery or something? So that's what's called Sroros, that the animal wasn't damaging directly. The animal stepped on one thing and that in turn causes the damage to take place. So the Gemara says that there's a special halacha that Sroros pays only Chasi Nezek. So the Gemara in the beginning of the second breath of Baba Kama asks, Menani Mili, how do you know, where did that come from? That Sroros pays Chasi Nezek? It doesn't make any sense. So the Gemara says, Hilchosa Gemirila. So whereas Rashi and that Gemara says, Halacha Moshe Messina, the Rambam doesn't say that. The Rambam says there was some kind of a pasuk, probably in Pasha Bishpatim, tucked away somewhere, and Chazal couldn't find it. They couldn't remember. They just couldn't remember what the where the derivation was. They knew that halacha was true, but they did not know what the makor was. So that's what's called Hilchosa Gemirila. So according to the Rambam, there is the Halacha Moshe Messina, that's one very, very unique category, and Hilchosa Gemirila should not be confused with the term Halacha Moshe Messina. Then there's the second category that the Rambam develops for us, that's called the Perish HaMakubo Mesinai. The only thing that it has is similar with Halacha Mesinai, that they're both from Sinai, but they're very, very different. Perish HaMakubo Mesinai means as follows, that there are psukim in the Chumash, that the simple reading of the psukim would indicate, would lead us to a very, very different halachic conclusion, and there was a special tradition given to Moshe Rabbeinu not to interpret the pasuk that way, but rather to interpret the pasuk in a entirely different way. For example, some of the famous examples, Ayin Tachazayin. So if you were just, a person didn't have the Mesorah, the person was a Karoy or a Tzuki and just opened up the Chumash, so we would translate it, an eye for an eye. So comes the Perish HaMakubo Mesinai and tells us, no, that it's not true, that that shot and that pasuk, Ayin Tachazayin, does not mean what it sounds like. But not only was there a Perish HaMakubo Mesinai, that Ayin Tachazayin doesn't mean what it sounds like, built into the Perish HaMakubo Mesinai was that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu that if you look hard enough in the Perish HaMakubo, you'll find the truth that that in fact is what the pshat in the pasuk is. So where do you see in the pasuk ayin tachasayin that it doesn't mean literally? So that's the first sugya in the eighth parak of Bava Kama, quotes eight different makaras, different tanoim, different drushes. How do you know that ayin tachasayin doesn't mean literally? So the Gemara shows you this pasuk must prove it and that pasuk must prove it, and this rebbe must prove it and that drush must prove it. The Gemara tries different derivations to try to prove that that's what ayin tachasayin means. Well, let's say another moshe the Rambam says. The pasuk says, "Lekachem lechem priates hadar." The Torah says, "You're taking the first day of Sukkot, a beautiful fruit." What does a beautiful fruit mean? Apples, very nice fruit. An orange, very nice fruit. A lot of fruits can qualify as a priates hadar. So how do you know it's an Esr? Says the Ram, at the end of the day, we know it's an Esr because the Kadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu, this is the translation. This is the official entire halachic translation of the phrase priates hadar. No other fruit is acceptable to be called a priates hadar. So if so, why does the Gemara in the third parak of Sukkah quote you with half a dozen reasons? How do you know that priates hadar means priates hadar? How do you know it means an Esr? So the Gemara says it's a prihadar be'ilana mishavah l'shana. It's the only kind of fruit that stays on the tree for more than one complete season. Or hadar is a lashon mayim, and it's in Greek, whatever the Gemara hydro. The Gemara goes upside. Another mocher that hadar means esrog, and esrog grows in a lot of water. So who's the Gemara kidding? These are the reasons. This is how we know that a priest hadar is an esrog. Before somebody came up with these reasons, so they were taking apples and oranges. So the Rambam says that's ridiculous. The Rambam says, of course, there was a perish of a kubim sinai that priest hadar means an esrog. But built into that tradition was that there are makoros in the Torah Shemichsav. If you look hard enough, if you delve into the Torah Shemichsav enough, you'll find makoros, you'll find ramazim for the pre-existing perish halacha mashu, the perish hamakubim mesinai. So says the Rambam, don't try to do that for halacha mashu mesinai. Don't try to find sukkah b'tei, it's full enough to be square, because you're wasting your time. There is no such pasuk. Any drush you're going to come up with stam shal shudas Torah, it's not a real Torah. Yeah. It's not a real macha. But a perish HaMakubim Mishnah has a makar, but don't think that the makar is the makar for the din. The makar is a support of the pre-existing din. The Ram gives you kahane examples of this. Another example in Yadav Yoma, the Rambam writes that how do you know that Shvirsa Omer, the makar is a Shabbos, doesn't mean Shabbos gracious. How do you know the Shabbos means Yom Tov? So the Rambam says that it was a perish of Makubah Misinai. Why did the Gemara quote makoros and quote sources in the Chumash to defend this idea that Shabbos doesn't mean Saturday, means Yom Tov for the purposes of Shvirsa Omer? So once again, it's a perish of Makubah Misinai which has support to it. So this is the second area of Tarshish Bapeh that the Rambam develops for us. There's Halacha Moshe Misinai, there's Perish HaMakubah Misinai. The difference between the two is that the Halacha Moshe Misinai does not relate to Tarshish B'Chsav B'Chlal, whereas the Perish HaMakubah Misinai is a Perush, it's an official Torah translation, official Torah interpretation of what the Pasuk of Chumash means. However, the common denominator between these two areas of Halacha, notwithstanding their differences, is says the Rambam, they were both given to Moshe Rabbeinu with Sinai, and they neither of them are subject to machlokes. The Rambam writes that if anybody's going to get up in one generation and say that I think that ayin tachas ayin means differently, or a person's going to get up and say I think that tefillin don't have to be square, so that's not a different shita. That's not eil ve'eil divrei Elokim Chayim. That's just wrong. That's just dead wrong. It's a non-negotiable. It's not a debatable point. The same way that I'm right, you can't argue about a pasuk chumash. The pasuk says you're not allowed to eat chazir. So someone's going to get up and say, no, I think you're allowed to eat chazir. So that's just clear. That's not a different opinion. That's just not part of the package. So the Rambam says that the halacha of Moshe Mesinai were agreed upon from day one. There was never a machlokes about them, and there was never a machlokes about the perushim. I'm a kabbalah Mesinai either. The Rambam will concede that sometimes you have machlokes them within the details of the halacha of Moshe Mesinai. Everybody agrees there's a halacha of Moshe Mesinai that still has to be square, but it's not clear which part of the tefillin has to be square. So some say the bottom has to be square, some say the top has to be square, some say the stitching has to be square. You can have machlokesim within the details of the halacha of Moshe Sinai. Let's say there's a halacha of Moshe Sinai, the tefillin has to be black. So some say that means the ritzuos have to be black. Some say that means the bottom also has to be black. You can have machlokesim in the details of the application of the halacha of Moshe Sinai, but you will never have a machlokes whether there exists a halacha of Moshe Sinai or not. So the Sefer Chavos Yoyer, one of the early Yeshivas of the Acharonim, so we had a lot of questions against the Rambam. He says, is it really true? There's never a machlokes in the Gemara about halacha Moshe Mesinai? So one of his many questions is, there's a machlokes of Tanoim whether Tzroros exists or not. The case that we gave before, whether you pay Chatzi Nezek, so we pass him that you do pay Chatzi Nezek for Tzroros, for the animal that kicks up the stone that breaks the Kli. And Sumchus, one of the Tavidim Rami Meir, Sumchus disagreed that he said Tzroros pays a Nezek Sholem. There is no special halacha called Tzroros. It says the Chavashir, how could the Rambam tell you that there can't be a machlokas on halacha Moshe Mesinai? It's the Mefereshim machlokas about it. The answer is obvious that the Rambam already was able to avoid that question because the Rambam held that Tzroros was not halacha Moshe Mesinai. The Rambam was very, very careful and he meant exactly what he said. If it's a halacha Moshe Mesinai, there can't be a machlokas. If it's a Hilchos HaGemira, well, Hilchos HaGemira was never what the Rambam said. Hilchos HaGemira doesn't mean it was the Prat Mesinai. It means that there was a pasuk, there was a drasha, there was a makar. So the same way we have machlokes, whether I accept the drasha, you don't accept the drasha. So there was a machlokes at Tanoi, whether the din of Tzroros actually exists or not. So the Rambam is very, very careful in his klal. The Rambam sticks to his guns that there is such a klal that you can't have a machlokes in either a halacha Moshe Mesinai or a perish of Makubah Mesinai. The Rambam writes that lo shamano davazem eolam, there should ever be any rav anywhere that should have gotten up from the days of Yeshua ben Nun onwards, says the Rambam, and say that ayin tachas ayin is mamash. You take out the person's eye. We have never ever in the history of Klal Yisrael ever heard of any person who's been part of the Mesorah to take an apple on Sukkot rather than an Esrog. So there are certain things that were given. They were never argued upon from day one. These are both the Perushim of Kabbalah Mesinai as well as Allah Moshe Mesinai, but they're not that many of them according to the Rambam. Then you come to the third area of Tereshi Bapeh, which becomes, in a sense, could be even the bulk of the Tereshi Bapeh, and that's the area of halachos which have to be derived using the midos shatar nidrashas them. So besides when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to Moshe Rabbeinu the Tereshi B'Chsav and gave him the basics of the Tereshi Bapeh, the halacha Moshe Mesinai, the Purushim HaKamon Mesinai, he also gave him the tools about how to figure out how to apply halacha to new shaylas. That how to, when a new question comes your way, so what do? So one of the midas that he told him was Kal V'Chomer. So you use your common sense and you try to figure out a Kal V'Chomer. Now Kal V'Chomer has a whole series of rules, sub-rules to it. So you dash in a Kal V'Chomer, but there's a principle of a Pirchas or a Kal V'Chomer. So what constitutes a Kal V'Chomer? What constitutes a Pirchas? There's a din of dash. Raya, how far Kavachomers can go, what is the limitation of Kavachomers. So there are a lot, there's a whole Torah of Kavachomers. Then there's a whole Torah of Binyan Avs, and then the whole Torah of the Shnei Ksuvim Achrishim Zeh. So each one of the Yidgivim Midas was given to Moshe Rabbeinu and explained to him how to use them, how to use them properly. But the catch behind using the Yidgivim Midas, how to derive halachas from the pre-existing sukkim, is that those are details that are potentially subject to machlokes. So I can have a certain kavachomer. I think this is a valid kavachomer, and you have a question on that kavachomer. I don't think your question is a good question. I think my kavachomer is better than your question, and you think you have a pirach on the kavachomer. We're fighting it out, we're arguing it, and we can't come to a conclusion. So the Rambam says that's okay. That's exactly what the Torah understood. The Kadosh Baruch Hu knew was going to happen in advance. That the Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to give the dinya Torah to Klal Yisrael, and now they're going to have to fight it out. They're going to have to argue it out to figure out, is it a good kavachomer, not a good kavachomer? Is that a good dinya nav? Is it not a good dinya nav? Does S really mean to include this? Does S not mean to include this? Does the Vav mean to include this? Does it not? Is it a call of fraud? Is it a rebuke of Mir? So you have, this is subject to machlokes. So the Rambam says, this is what we find, the Ruben, the machlokesim and Shas, so really revolve around these kinds of machlokesim. Like you have a Tana, you have a Mishnah. So the Mishnah says, Rabbi Meir says, Chayev, Rabbi Yudah says, Potter. So the Gemara will say, the Micah, Mifugia, what are they arguing about? Rabbi Meir, Darish, such and such. Rabbi Yudah, Darish, such and such. Rabbi Meir held this Svara. Rabbi Yudah held that Svara. So all of these types of svaras and kavachimers and binyanavs and matinus and ribuys and mios and all these kinds of things, the klolim were given to Moshe Rabbeinu. The method of analysis was given to Moshe Rabbeinu, but how to apply it to each and every case was up to each chacham to try to figure out what to do. So now, what do you do when you have machlokesim? So now you have, now we just open ourselves up to the concept of machlokes. In halacha moshe mesina, there's no machlokes. Perish hamakum mesina, there's no machlokes. But in this third area of Torah Shabbat, which is the bulk of Torah Shabbat, which is subject to machlokes, what do you do? So it's al zeh ne'emar ki pole mimcha davar mishpat. So the Torah tells you exactly what you do. The Torah says if you're not sure what to do, so then you go to the Beis Din, and Beis Din achir rab mahatos. Beis Din has to follow the road. And if the Beis Din in your city doesn't know how to pass in the Shaila, so you got to go to Yerushalayim. And rachis al piyad davar sheyigidlu chamin amakamu. So then the Beis Din in Yerushalayim, the Sanhedrin in the Lishkas Hagodes, has to come to the conclusion. They have to vote on it, and whatever the rov is, achir rab mahatos. So the Torah gives us a way to be machriya when you have snakers, when you have different chilukei deis as to how to pass certain shilas. That's what the Rambam writes, that was the perfect Torah system. That was supposed to be in place from day one. So when the Torah was first given to Moshe Rabbeinu, that's what was supposed to happen. That there was supposed to be, of course it was understood they're going to be shilas, and there were going to be machlokesim. And machlokes started from the very beginning, but the idea was that machlokesim was supposed to be concluded upon. They were supposed to be paskined upon, and once they were paskined upon, then they were over. Then you moved on to the next crisis, next week. But each time the shilah was resolved, it was resolved and finished. So unfortunately what happened, says the Rambam, historically, is that Beis Din HaGadol ceased to function. So after shortly before the time of Churban Bayis Sheni, the Beis Din HaGadol left Yerushalayim, even though it was functioning in a somewhat limited capacity after the Churban, but after a couple of hundred years after that, it ceased to function entirely. So now we're stuck with a big problem. Now we have machlokes, and we have shilas that come up, and we have no way to put it to a final vote. So then you have a problem. So that's why we have this idea of machlokes b'zman hazeh. Machlokes is not something that was supposed to be. It was built into the system there would be machlokes, but it was also built into the system that the machlokes was going to be resolved. Unfortunately, part of the tragedy of the Churban is that we don't have that mechanism to resolve the machlokes anymore. So we try to do the best we can. So when we have a row, when you have a clear-cut row, so we try to be machriya machlokes. There are certain machlokes that don't get decided. Sometimes it takes generations and centuries until the machlokes finally gets resolved. But according to the Rambam, the whole concept of machlokes was limited primarily to this third category of halacha, this category of the Midah Shatar Nidrashus to him. The Rambam writes that this third category of halacha, since it is subject to a human understanding, human intellect, and it is subject to machlokes, it's also in a certain very limited sense, I want you to misunderstand what I mean, but it's subject to change also in the following sense, that we know there's a klal that ein beis din yochel levatos ever beis din chaveiro elam kimgol men b'chochma v'minyan, that if one beis din passes a shaila, they make a halacha in generation X, So the next Beis Din can't change that halacha unless they're greater the chachma of a minyan. So the Rambam in Hilchos Mamrim quotes the name of the Yerushalmi that only applies to Dinim Derabbanan. That means if a Beis Din makes a Din Derabbanan, so a later Beis Din can't just stand Macharavek, can't change it unless they're gadol b'chachma of a minyan. But what if it's not the Beis Din making a Din Derabbanan, it's the Beis Din passing on a Shaila D'Araisa? So let's say in one generation the Shaila comes up on a Din D'Araisa. Is this called Chil Shabbat D'Araisa now? So the Beis Din comes to the conclusion that it's Asur. And then 20 years later the Beis Din reevaluates the question, and the next Beis Din reevaluates the question and thinks that which the previous Beis Din said, oh, sir, we think is now mutter. So the Rambam says, that's perfectly okay. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And that's the way it was done from the days of Moshe Rabbeinu onwards. The Gemara comments on the Pasuk, the Pasuk showed him, that you have to go, L'shoyfet Eshayyeh B'yam Mahim, Ein Lecha L'shoyfet Shibya Mecha. So what do you mean, Ein Lecha L'shoyfet Shibya Mecha? It means even if the Shoyfet in your generation is of lesser stature than the previous generation, you have to go and ask him the Shaila. So the Rishami says, no, that's Legabi Dinim Derabban, not Legabi Dinim Deraisa. Legabi Dinim Deraisa, of course, whatever the Beis Din of that generation says, that's the Psach that's going to be given.
But you know that they asked the question in that generation, they got an answer. You can ask the next generation, ask the question again.
If the new Beis Din wants to reevaluate, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we find that in the Gemara all the time. We have Mishnah Rishon and Mishnah Charona. The Gemara says all the time that the earlier Tanaim said one thing, and then the later Tanaim said, no, not so fast, let's reevaluate, and we're going to pass it against what they said in the previous generation. So the Rambam quotes the name of the Rishami, that's perfectly okay. That's the way it was done for Dairi Dairis in that way. So that idea that you can turn around the previous Din D'Araisa, that's only true in the third category of Halacha. That's not true in Halacha Moshe Mesinai. That's not true in Perish HaMakuv Mesinai. Imagine if in the previous generation they said that Tefillin has to be square. So now in a new generation we're going to sit and reevaluate and say, no, you know what, we think Tefillin has to be round. What do you mean you're reevaluating? Who are you reevaluating? The only source for that halacha is pure halacha Moshe Mesinai, who's never subject for debate in the first place, who's never up for discussion in the first place. You can only overturn a psach of a Beis Din in an area of halacha that was originally shayach to be debating about. But either halacha Moshe Mesinai or a Perish HaMakuv Mesinai was never subject to debate in the first place, so of course you can't change it in a later generation. So based on this Rambam, the Briska Rav has a fascinating comment on the whole story that the Gemara Masechet Yevamos fills in the details, the gaps, in Megillas Rus. In the end of Megillas Rus, so when Boaz is getting ready to be Goel B'Sodah, is getting ready to marry Rus, so they realize that he's not the closest Goel, so he goes over to the closest Goel, and he says, okay, you have the first cracks. So he says, you could be Goel B'Sodah. So the person says, good, okay, Anochi Ego, I'll redeem the field. So Boaz says to him, okay, not only are you going to redeem the field, you have to marry Rus also. So he gets cold feet. So he says, wait a second, I have to marry Rus also? I can't do that. Penash chisos nachla sig. If I marry Rus, that's going to destroy my legacy. It's going to destroy my nachla. So Chazal said, what does that mean, penash chisos nachla sig? So with the Goel, turned around to Boaz, and he said, no, I can't marry Rus, because she's from Moab, and my children are going to be psulim. It's going to be a terrible thing. I don't want my children to become psulim. So therefore, I'm not going to marry her. So the Briska Rav says, if that's what the Goel held, if the Goel held that Rus was really a Sur Levo Bakal, that he held Moabi Vafili Moabis, so that he should have said, what is he putting the blame on his children for? He should have said, I don't want to do it because she's a Surah to me. So what does that mean, Penash Chisas Nachalasi? It's a Madna Lasha. So the Briska Rav, in a pure Briska style, develops the whole Yisayit. This is one of those examples that, if it's Pshat in Megillah or not, it doesn't really matter. It's so sharp, and it's so brings home the point that we're pointing out, that it's endless in and of itself. So comes the Skirov and explains what it means as follows, that Boaz presents that the halacha is Moavi v'lo Moavis, that the halacha is that Rus is permitted to live over Kol. So the Gemara in the Sechus Yevamos has two different ways of understanding this halacha of Moavi v'lo Moavis. So on the one hand, the Gemara presents it as a drasha, as a mokvah. The Gemara is a whole svara that it says in the pasuk that al dvar shalof kidmas kam alechem uvamayim. The reason why you can't marry Moavim is because they didn't come forward with the water. But v'chiderash al nashim lohavim alechem uvamayim. It wouldn't have been sinias for the women to bring the lech of a mayim. So therefore, the reason of the chumash doesn't apply. So that's an interesting spar. That's an interesting drasha. You can disagree with that. You can start the pilpul. Does she in time dekra? Lo does she in time dekra? Here the pasuk says the reason. The pasuk really this is the only reason. That's already something which is from the yud gimel midah shatan address category of halacha. It's already I could say a spar. If I can't, I could say a spar. You could say a spar. Yerim could say a spar. Maybe he's right. Maybe he's wrong. That's one way of understanding this halacha moavim lemoavis. Then the gemara has a whole different twist on moavim lemoavis. The gemara says kach mekublan mideiz ben shoshmo haramosi moavim. I have a tradition from Shmuel and Avi. That's it. Moavim lamoavis. Later on about David and Melech. But that's the din. That's tach nemer halacha moshe mesinai moavim lamoavis. What's the difference whether the source of the halacha is the first way or the source of the halacha is the second way? So the nafkamina is very, very significant for our sugya. If the nature of the halacha is based on a drasha, on a pasuk, on a svara, it may be true in this generation, and it may be different in 100 years from now. That means if a Beis is going to come 100 years from now and say a different shot in the pasuk, so then the halacha in that generation is going to be different. If it's based on halacha Moshe Mesinai, then it's not debatable. Then it's over, it's closed, then it's part of the Torah, and that's it. No one can ever question it. So comes the Goel and turns around to Boaz, and he says, you want me to marry this woman? You want me to marry Ruth? I have no problem marrying her. She's Luteris for me. You know why? Because you're the Rosh Hashanah, you're the head of the Beis, you're the pasuk in that Moavid Blum Moavis. That's wonderful. But that's nice for me. And what about in three generations from now when your great grandson comes and gives a different shot? So he's going to pass it against what his elder Zayda said. He's going to come with a new Chumran 100 years from now. So it's going to turn out, Ashkis Mufak will see that in 100 years from now, they're going to tell me that my children are Psulim Moavid Kol. So I don't want to get involved with her. So he didn't understand the goal. He didn't chaf. He only learned the first half of Sugin Yavamis. He thought that the din of Moavid Blum Moavis was a drush, it was a svara. It's something which was subject to machlokes, and it's something which could be changed in a later generation. That was his mistake. The real mukha for Moavim Lemoavis is that it's Halacha Moshe Mesinai. If it's Halacha Moshe Mesinai, it's Kayam Yalim Boaz. Nobody can ever change Halacha Moshe Mesinai. So that's the Brisker Rav's razzle-dazzle reading into the discussion between the Goel and Moav. So Kolpanim, again, whether that's actually what was going on or not doesn't really matter, but it highlights this difference in terms of the halachic system, that there are certain halachos that are Halacha Moshe Mesinai, Ferushim, Kabbalah Mesinai, that are not subject to machlokes and are not subject to change. Whereas the third category of Tashi Bapa, that's the category of drushes and svaras and Yigil Midish and Sunday Drush them, those are number one subject to machlokes, and number two, potentially subject to change. And the change that it is subject to is in a sense it's easier to change a Dindir Ais and a Dindir Rabbanan. A Dindir Rabbanan, then you have all kind of conditions. It has to be based in Gol B'chok with a minion. When it comes to changing a Dindir Ais, so you just have to have Ein L'chol L'shayt B'chibiyam Mecha. It's based on this that the Kesef Mishnah is modern, that if this is really true, that when it comes to Dinim Deraisa, so any Beis Din in any generation can change what a previous Beis Din said, so then how come the Amoraim can't disagree with the Tanoim? Or to make the question even more powerful, why can't we disagree with the Amoraim? So Ravina and Ravashi said something, so they gave up Tzapsak Halacha. So if they gave a din derabban, let's say the Amoraim were Misafi and an Isner derabban or something, so we're not Dol B'chochom of a minion, so we don't have a right to overturn the Gezeris. So that was stuck with. But if the Amoraim said a pshat and a posat, the Amoraim said not a loch marisina, not a perish amakul mesinai, but they had a mematzina, they had a kavachim, they had a binyanav, and we think, no, we're not so convinced, we think fakir, so why can't we change that? So what made exactly the koch of the chachamim, where was this special halacha that came down Mesinai, no pun intended, that at the end of the period of Ravina Ravashi, so that's it, you can't argue with them anymore. What exactly happened at the time of the end of the tkufa of Ravina and Ravashi? So Rabbi Chanan explains what he thinks happened was really as follows, that it's not that there was anything magical or mystical that took place at the time of Ravina and Ravashi, the time of the Chasimus HaGemara, but what happened historically was as follows, that we know that until the period of Ravina and Ravashi, there was pretty much a central authority in Klal Yisrael. In the days of the Beis HaMikdash, so there was a central authority of the Beis Din in the Lishkas HaGozes. That's why the Gemara says in Chagiga there were very, very few machloksim. There was a running machlokes about doing smicha and kabbanas and yanta for a couple of generations, but short of that, that, there wasn't too much they were arguing about. And in the days of Hillel and Shammai, there were three or four machleksim, very, very few machleksim. When the gzeiras and the persecution started to affect Klal Yisrael, so it was hard to get the Beis Din always together, and sometimes there were gezeiras that the Beis Din couldn't even get together for. So Lemaisa Machlokshim started to be in the Shrab and Klal Yisrael. In the days of Rav Yehuda Hanasi, so Rav Yehuda Hanasi had the ability, historically and socially and economically and politically, he had the koach to unite the Chachmei Torah, primarily the Chachmei Torah in Eretz Yisrael, and he was able to come to certain conclusions, or certain things that had not really been decided upon for a couple of generations, were decided by the days of Rav Yehuda Hanasi, and there was in a sense a kibbutz of Rav Chachmei Yisrael. That pretty much happened again at the time of the end of Chassidus Talmud Bavli, that for the most part the Jewish community was centrally located in Bavli. At that time already the Jewish community in Eretz Yisrael was almost non-existent at that period of time. And the Jewish communities in other parts of the world, they're not really developed, there were little seeds here and there in different places, but the overwhelming majority of the action, the Torah action, was clearly taking place in Bavli. So the Rambam describes that in the days of Rav Yehuda Hanasi, there was still a central authority, which never repeated itself from that point ad hayom hazeh. So says the Rambam, anything that was agreed upon by the Beis Din of Rav Yehuda and Rav Ashi had the status, had the stamp of Kol Chachmei Yisrael. Anything that was instituted after the days of Rav Yehuda and Rav Ashi did not have the stamp of Kol Chachmei Yisrael. And therefore, the Rambam says that any din that was agreed upon in the Gemara itself is binding on all of Klal Yisrael. Any din that was post the period of the Gemara is only binding on those communities that accepted it. That's what we find, that the Ashkenazim and these Menagim and the Sephardim and these Menagim, they accepted these Kumras and they didn't accept these Kumras, they accepted these Charam and they didn't accept these Charam, these Kederas. So the Rambam says, that's fine, that's no problem. Anything that was instituted by the Rav Yehuda and Rav Ashi, that was a kibbutz of Kol Chachmei Yisrael, so that's binding at all Klal. So anything that was post time of the Chassidus of Talmud is only binding on those communities that happened to have been accepted them in the first place. So based on this whole development that the Rambam gives about historically how the end of the Chassidus of Talmud was the end of the period of in a sense, the kibbutz of Rav Chachmei Yisrael, so Rabbi Chanan suggests that maybe that's what's going on here also. That the Rambam seems to write in other places that whenever you have a psach of Rav Chachmei Yisrael, that has a status like a Beis Din HaGadol. That's like the status of the Sanhedrin. The role of the Sanhedrin is to represent the Chachmei HaTorah. It's not practical every time a shaila comes up to send a shaila to all of the Chachamim. So you have 71 Chachamim who are the Shlichim. They're the ones who represent the greatest of the Chachamim in the generation. They're the, I don't know, you know, the younger call them the delegates, the super delegates, whatever you want to call them. They're the ones who are representing the Hamon Am. They're representing all the regular Tamil Chachamim throughout Klal Yisrael. So in the absence of such a Beis Din, so the only thing you could do to Paskin Shaila is to get the real consensus view. So it's very hard to do that. It's very hard to monitor that. It's very hard to figure out what the people have to say, what the Chacham have to say about any given Shaila. So Rav Yehuda and Rav Ashi were able to do that. That means the Gemara was accepted by all of the Chacham. We don't find anyone after the period of the Gemara who said, no, we don't really accept the Gemara. We don't find any Chacham who said, we don't accept the Gemara. The Rambam wrote a sefer, there were people who didn't accept the Rambam. The Shulchan Aruch wrote a sefer, the people who didn't accept the Shulchan Aruch. But the Gemara was, you know, pretty much accepted fairly quickly by the entirety of Klal Yisrael. So the Rambam, the Rabbi Chanan develops a little bit more this Rambam, that since the Gemara was accepted by all of Klal Yisrael, so that is the status of a Pesach Beis Din HaGadol. Once they have a Pesach Beis Din HaGadol, you can't change that Pesach unless you are also a Beis Din HaGadol. So in theory, if you'd have another Beis Din HaGadol that was manifested, then you could reevaluate what it says in the Gemara. So a lot of that's going to happen in the near future. So therefore, Bizman HaZeh, we are in a sense left with the last remnants of Pesach of Beis Din HaGadol. So the last Pesach of Beis Din HaGadol that we have on record is halachas of the Gemara, whatever the hilchos of the Gemara is, whatever the conclusions of the sugyas in the Gemara, or the last word that was given by the last time there was a convention of Rav Chachmei Yisrael. So the halacha is, we are bound by that. That is the shofar shebi'amecha. We don't have any other shofar anymore because we haven't been able to reconvene a Beis Din HaGadol. So it's not a sphere. What the Rambam said in the name of the Yerushalmi, that the halacha deraita can change from generation to generation. If you have a new Beis Din, or if you have a new kibbutz Chachmei Yisrael, then you could theoretically overturn the previous generation's halachas. But that's only true if you have a new Beis Din, or you have a new reconvening of the Chachmei Torah. So we have yet to have a Beis Din HaGadol since the days of the Gemara. We have yet to have a convening of all Chachmei Yisrael since the days of the Gemara. So therefore, we are left with what it says in the Gemara, whatever it says in the Gemara. That is after until if there'll be a Beis Din HaGadol sometime to reconvene, and then we'll see from there.
So why can't one learn why you're going to have
So Lechora, based on this whole story, the Amoraim should have been able to, in the days of Ravin Ravashi, should have been able to argue on the Tanaim. So the emphasis is that there are some who say that they really could have, but they chose not to. Because the Gemara, every once in a while, does have a sugya where you have an Amora that ends up arguing with the Tana. So it could be that there's nothing intrinsically wrong with an Amora arguing with the Tana. Kibbu aleihem. They understood that they weren't on par in terms of their Torah knowledge, so they themselves backed out. But in a chenami, in terms of pure halacha, there may not be anything wrong with an Amora arguing with the Tana. Which may also, you know, share a little bit of light on the idea that the Gemara has, like, Rav Tana u'Polig. That Rav was an Amora, yet he was able to argue with the Tanakh. Well, what does that mean? He had a special dispensation to argue. So the answer is that there was never anything written in stone that an Amora can argue with Tanakh. Rav was so close to the period of the Tanakh, this first generation Amora, and he felt that he still was in the ballpark of arguing.
Actually, so
again, so these are the first three different categories of Tereshim Bapeh. So there's the Halacha Moshe Mesinai, that's nothing to do with any Kesukim at all. There's the Perish of Mekubala Mesinai. The common denominator between the two is that neither of them are subject to Machlaikas, and neither of them are subject to change. And the third is the area of Svaras and Kavachimers and the Binyanabs and the Matinas and Drushas, which is number one subject to Machlaikas, number two in theory subject to change by another type of a Bezin. Then there are other parts of Tereshim Bapeh that the Rambam refers to, and those are Dirim Derabanan. So things, once the Chachamim institute Mitzvahs Derabanan, so the Chachamim institute Mitzvahs Derabanan, they institute Gezeiros Derabanan, Shiyagim, so anything that they institute now becomes part of Tereshim Bapeh also. It's a different type of Tereshim Bapeh. It's Derabanan. There are differences in Halacha between Dirim Derais and Dirim Derabanan, but it now becomes subsumed under the category of Tereshim Bapeh. The Rav once said that if a person observes a mitzvah derabanan, so that's only a mitzvah derabanan, it's not a mitzvah deraisis. That person washes until shidayim, the person reads the Megillah, so he's fulfilling a mitzvah derabanan. But if a person learns the halachas of until shidayim, he's fulfilling a mitzvah deraisa. The mitzvah of Talmud Torah is to learn anything that has a shaykhah to Torah, anything that has a shem Torah on it, so that's included in the mitzvah deraisa of Talmud Torah. So once the Chacham instituted the din derabanan, that becomes a chelik of Torah, that becomes part of the Messiah, and the mitzvah deraisa of Talmud Torah is chal on that as well. So that's what the Rav was apparently once said. One year he was saying Shirim Masechus Megillah. So in the middle of the year he said no one should have Chalish Nadas. They were only fulfilling Talmud Torah Midir Rabbanan. He said no, this is Talmud Torah Deraisa. Even though the sugya is only Midir Rabbanan, it's called the Chetzesh Torah even on the level of Deraisa. Then the Rambam further breaks down that not only is there a fourth category of Dinim Derabanan, but then there's a category of what's called things which are not even quite Dinim Derabanan. There are Hagim Derabanan and Yehugim and Bezdim Derabanan. Those already break down within the category of things which are midrabanan. But on top of the basic structure that the Rambam develops for us is that although we use this term Tereshim Bapeh in a very, very loose way, there are very, very real halachic categories within Tereshim Bapeh. So the basic halachic categories are the halacha Moshe Mishinais, there's the Perushim HaMakubalim Mishinais, the halachas that are derived based on drushas and svaras, and then you have the whole other area, the left area of Dirim Derabanan, which itself can be further broken down into its diverse categories. Hopefully, when we Makabal Torah and Shavuos, I'll have a little bit of a better insight as to what exactly we're being Makabal, but some of the different parameters of this wonderful gift that we have called Tereshim Bapeh. Thank you.